And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I wonder what the places were that you thought of at the start of this service. I wonder if anyone could just call out some places that stick you. Glencoe, okay. Derwentwater. Cornwall. Kildale. Okay, that's quite close, isn't it? Sorry. Right. Okay. Anyone a bit further afield? Bali. Now that's nearly across the other side of the planet, isn't it? York. that's equally exotic as Bali, I'm sure. Okay. Clive, were you going to say something?
I was going to say York.
All right. Okay. Oh, two for York. Okay. York's winning.
So,
Annecy, France. Okay. Okay. Eston Hills, right, thank you. Now that's getting a bit nearer again, isn't it? Okay, thank you. Let me share with you the place I thought of. It's called Budle Bay. It's near Bamborough in Northumberland. And I got to know it through Lindsay. Her family have a static caravan there, and they've had it for centuries. I was up there last weekend and stepped out, or rather stumbled out of the caravan at night. My family can tell you that there's one thing noisier than me being noisy, and that's me trying to be quiet. I fell through the doorway, but then stopped because looking up was a beautiful, clear night sky. It's one of the places in the UK with the least light pollution. So if the sky is clear, you really can see a great deal. And my son pointed out to me we could actually see the Milky Way that night. Now, you will know well that in a town like Middlesbrough, when we step out at night, a bit later in the year when we leave this service, we won't see any stars outside because the light of the street lights makes it the night sky invisible to us. They're there all right, but we just can't see them. Now, Psalm 19 that we just heard is like us moving from a town into the deepest countryside. As we read it, our vision is being adjusted so that we can see the things that are invisible to us, and they actually come into sight in all their glory. Now, if you can find a Bible in front of you in the pews, please do turn to it. Psalm 19 is on page 530 and 531. And if you've got it on your phone, please scroll it up. I don't know if it's possible for the whiz kids at the back there to produce it up on the screen. That would be great if that's possible. Psalm 19 has three clear sections to it. It's very important to notice that it comes in three chunks. And you make sense of it by looking at those three chunks. The first chunk is verses 1 to 6. And they are about how the world reveals God to us. The heavens declare the glory of God. That's section 1. It's sections verses 1 to 6. Then section 2 is verses 7 to 11, where the psalmist says that God's law reveals God to us. So the world reveals God to us in verses 1 to 6, and then verses 7 to 11, God's law reveals God to us. And then the third section is verses 12 to 14, and this is the response of us in worship to God in response to that revelation. So section 3 is verses 12 to 13, and I'm going to move through those sections with you tonight. The Psalms are poems. Now, we're used to poems. We tend to think of poems as rhyming. You know, roses are red, violets are blue, da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. Old Testament poems are quite different. They work by having each verse having two bits very often, and the second bit underlines the first bit. It's saying the same thing, says it in a slightly different way. And you can see that in verse 1. So verse 1 goes, the heavens declare the glory of God. That's kind of the first chunk of it. And then comes, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Now, if you look at those two bits, you can see that they are actually saying the same thing, but the second chunk is saying it's the same thing in just a slightly different way. They're both saying that when we look at the majesty of the skies, the heavens, we see God at work. And so you've got one statement and then a kind of highlighter, red highlighter underneath, emphasizing that point. Verse 2 develops that. The heavens pour forth speech, they display knowledge. Though they have no speech, they say something very loudly. That's verses 3 and 4. And the verses 4 to 6 say that the sun in the sky embodies all this. Now, of course, the Psalms were written in a climate far sunnier than the climate you and I live in which the sun was a continual feature. You could pretty much guarantee you would see the sun most of the day. Now this planet, imagine this planet, if we thought of this planet orbiting just a little bit closer to our sun, we would all fry. It's a very delicate balance to allow life to be sustained. And if instead this planet was orbiting the sun and kind of was knocked out of its orbit just a little bit, so it was orbiting a little bit further out from the sun, we would all freeze. The very fine calculation that enables life to exist. I recently watched the movie Martian, starring Matt Damon. Anybody here seen that movie? Yeah, there's a few here. Okay, well, the movie imagines a manned mission to Mars in a few years' time, which goes wrong, and where one of the crew is left behind on Mars as the other crew members return to Earth. And the movie brings out the obvious point that the astronauts had to bring absolutely everything with them in order to sustain life. And the guy stuck on Mars, therefore, has a huge problem in living at all. Psalm 19, like many other psalms, shows us the value of the natural world. The heavens declare the glory of God. And that means that we should, in turn, value the natural world ourselves. Here is a biblical mandate for treading lightly on the earth that God has given to us. In the ancient Middle East, where the psalm was written and first heard, the nations around Israel worshipped the sun. They worshipped the sun. The sun was a god. The sun was seen as so majestic that it was divine. Now, when you think of that context, these words from Psalm 19 take on a new meaning. The heavens, you can see from this psalm, are pointing us to God, but they are not themselves God. The heavens declare the glory of God, they are not God. The vast immensity of space, the psalm is saying, is like a window through which you can see God. But the point of a window is you look through it. The point of a window, you don't look at a window to look at the window itself. You look through it to what's beyond it. So too, the wonders of creation, of which you and I shared just now, they are windows through which we glimpse the God who made them. The ancients were tempted to worship the sun and moon, to stop with the world and not look through the world to the one who made it. And we do something similar if, for instance, we see the world as mere accident, not considering the God who sustains it moment by moment. And we do the same when, if you think about the practice of astrology, reading one's star sign in the paper. That is focusing on the natural world, in this case the stars and their patterns, but not looking beyond the stars to the God who brings creation into being. Again, like seeing a window, but not looking through it, just looking at the window. And that means we, in turn, should place a very high value on the natural world, not see it as something we can just manipulate as we choose. We can't treat nature merely as a thing to exploit. The Psalms, in general, give us a host of reasons why we should, Christians should care about creation. Verses 1 to 6, that's the first section in the psalm. Then the second section starts with verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. And this second section runs from verse 7 to verse 11. And just as the natural world reveals God in verses 1 to 6, so Israel believed that the law of God, given to Moses on Mount Sinai, too reveals who God is. Now, by law, the psalm meant the huge wealth of commands that can be found in the first five books of the Bible. But we can see these laws boiled down to us in the Ten Commandments. Here we find God's road plan for life. Do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness. The Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. The immensity of space is staggering, but it does not give us guidance to us as individual people on how we order our individual lives. We face, each of us, challenges in our lives, and we struggle to know what to do in the face of those challenges. We need some kind of support structure, some scaffolding for the soul, and that's what this law provides. We can sometimes think of the word law as something that's a kind of restrictive, so it's kind of it's stopping you having your fun. But this sense of law is meant to be life-giving. You might think of the way that in order to travel, we need to be able to have laws that allow us to travel the streets safely. It's not good if people simply drive at whatever speed they like, say at 80 miles an hour up the Linthorpe Road. And we need people to choose to travel on one side of the road. You know, it's not good to be, we can just say, okay, lorries can travel on a different side to cars or something. And just as we need laws for the traffic on the roads, we need laws to travel through our lives. That's what the Ten Commandments give us. And each of us as individuals and as a society is in desperate need of a guide to help us act wisely. This is what the law of the Lord offers to us. And it's striking what Jesus does with the Old Testament law in the New Testament. He both accepts it and raises the bar again. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus quotes the commandments and tightens them up. You have heard it said, you shall not murder, but I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. And Jesus does this to the rest of the Old Testament law. And on one level, this is terrifying. Who can possibly live like this? But Jesus was all too aware of our frailty. The law shows us how to be godly, but it does not give us the power to be godly. And Christ comes to us on the cross and in the empty tomb and by the sending of the Spirit to impart to us the strength that we ourselves lack. So then God is revealed through the natural world, verses 1 to 6, and through his law, verses 7 to 11. And the final section is verses 12 to 14, which is our response to this revelation. The immensity of God makes the psalmist all too aware of his own frailty. Who can discern their own errors? Forgive my hidden faults, he prays. Keep your servant from willful sins. May they not rule over me. And then that final verse is a prayer to God for strength. May the words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Having gazed on the immensity of space, having pondered the high standards to which God calls us to live as individuals, the right response is to fall onto our knees and seek God's strength for our lives. This world is not some cosmic accident. It was meant. We sense something of that when we gaze up into the vast night sky. And we as individuals are not cosmic accidents. We are meant to be by God. The existence of God's law tells us that God is bothered about the kind of people we are and the ways we act. We matter to him. That's why the law was given. May the words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in thy sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer. These are the final words of Psalm 19. They are words which are quite often used by preachers when they start to preach, as I did tonight. What is striking is that they work equally well, I think, as a prayer, particularly as a prayer to start the day. The new day that has been given to us by God, in a world given to us by God, which displays his glory. Surely the right response each morning is to say, with the author of Psalm 19, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer. As the psalmist prayed that prayer, he was looking forward to Jesus, who would break through the barrier between humanity and God and make it possible for our words and our hearts to align with the heart of God. Let me finish. Whatever part of nature speaks to you, whether it's somewhere very far away, or whether it's simply the dew on the grass of Albert Park, or the seafront at Saltburn, the heavens declare the glory of God. And the right response from each of us is to pray that last verse of Psalm 19. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer.